For May the 30th, 2014, we welcome Dennis back. We talk about the Oculus Rift's potential use for livestock, then we talk about what the hell is up with pinball. Welcome to the 63rd level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. And as you heard, it is a joyous occasion because the whole gang is back together. Welcome back, Dennis.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. So how is California? You get to see the ocean from a different side? I guess it'd be a different ocean.
No, it was well, most of it was good, I guess. First 14/15 of it were pretty swell. And then there was that last little bit where I had a stroke. Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've posted on Facebook about this on my personal feed, and I actually a lot of listeners kind of reached out and were supportive, which is amazing. Thank all of you so much. But it's just it was a totally random thing that happened. I was in the hospital for a couple of days while they ran tests on me and stuff. I'm totally stable. There's no lasting damage or anything like that. It was definitely a scary half hour or so while they were rushing me there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that kind of unexpectedly extended our vacation, and there's still a couple tests left for me to run. They've got, you know, a couple ideas on what it might be, and they just need to make sure that the data matches up with that before they prescribe any treatments. Don't want to get my chest cut open with a maybe,
right?
You know, being kind of sure. But no, it's you know. I've said to people over and over again, it's completely overwhelming, the amount of just support and love that people poured out on me and my wife Jen when we were going through it, and that's very much appreciated. And it's still being cleared up. I'll keep you posted on it. But given what happened, there were a lot of kind of small blessings in there. That, you know, UCLA where I was the best stroke hospital in the world. There was no lasting damage when it's, you know, that can be devastating to some people. So there's a lot to be grateful for in the middle of it.
Yeah. And yet Ellen is too busy retweeting her own selfie to get you guys a rain check ticket.
I've had several people say, oh man, you really, really, really didn't want to see the Ellen show, because that's what we were going to do that after.
Took some kind of like CIA stroke inducement pill.
Yeah.
kept it hidden in your back molar.
Yeah, if I ever see Ellen, I'll tell her that my take on it is that my brain was so excited that it literally could not handle it. Mm-hmm. But we've been assured that we're invited back next season, and that's through kind of the original person we went through for tickets, and no word on if there'll be anything else there. But we had I think, you know, it's all the UCLA is a teaching hospital, so there's a bunch of med students there.
Yeah.
And I think every single one of them was like, oh my god, I'm writing Ellen a letter. I was like, okay, thanks, do that.
Cool.
So yeah.
Oh. Well, I'm incredibly happy to have you back. I don't know about Ben or Dennis, Ben or David, but I am.
Are you happy that you're back, Dennis?
I actually took on the role of Dennis while you were gone.
Yeah. he's the podcast Dennis.
It was really weird podcast, yeah.
Yeah, for like not being able to speak correctly, like while I was having it, and mm-hmm. you know, be able to like remember basic facts and, you know, form sentences, it feels really good to just be back on the air and at least my version of coherent. So,
I do think one of the, I don't know, this feels weird to say, but to me funnier parts of this though was when I first called you up and you know. Talked, you know, made sure everything was all right, and you know, said, you know, is there anything I can do for you? And you're like, yes, whatever you do, make sure that a multiplayer question is posted.
So, okay, yeah. So the first week you were gone, I thought it was ridiculous that you were like driving up and down the 101, like posting it from your phone. Like, dude, just enjoy your vacation. Like,
no, I talked with Jen about that. Uh-huh. You know, I was like, you know, I'm on vacation. I want to do the things that I enjoy.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, I was like, you know, so I thought about it. I was like, do I enjoy, you know, posting that stuff up? And I was like, yeah. And I can actually, I you know, had I not had a little bit of a medical adventure there, I was really planning the second week to be like, I can force my co-host to talk about anything I want. I will allow. You can be like, reveal your darkest fantasies. And you know, everyone on the show is contractually obligated to answer the multiplayer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really unwise when I drew up the charter to put that in there.
I'm actually connected to a lie detector right now.
Yeah, we can't afford to have that clause annulled. So.
Yeah. No, it was right next to the one about, you know, internal disputes being handled by knife fight, which I also thought was weird. But
yeah. that was a crazy weekend.
Inside joke on that, was actually me and Dennis were roommates during college, and that was actually in our roommate agreement.
That was actually in our roommate agreement.
So you guys just never disagreed because you're both alive.
Right.
Who's your RA?
Well,
oh gosh, goodness gracious, yeah. But I thought that posting from vacation was dedication, but then having us post from a hospital bed, I think you care about this more than us.
No, this is
the MVP award. Yeah,
yeah.
I'll do anything for an MVP, even have a stroke.
Oh goodness gracious.
No, this is I absolutely love doing this, and any way I can stay connected to it, I will. So, even on vacation, like I said, it fell into the camp of fun things that I wanted to do, and that's what you do on vacation. So,
most certainly,
yeah.
So let's let us continue into the episode proper. We don't have a multiplayer this week because we're trying to keep the episode a little bit shorter. So don't worry, that is not going away forever. But we are going to talk about a little bit of news and then catch up on what we have been playing. Does that sound good to everybody here? Is that amicable? Do we have to get the knives out?
Not this time.
I always like the knife fights where you take a length of cord and then you tie the left hands together.
Yeah.
It's funny you should mention that.
I knew you'd have something to say about that.
I'm actually, like, my big thing when I'm not doing my research or the podcast right now is trying to get ready for a stick and knife fighting gathering in July.
Neighborhood and stick fights?
What?
Neighborhood stick fights?
Yeah,
stick
pretty much.
Knife fights. Yeah.
And the first one I went to, some of the guys decided to do that, the whole, like, tie the arms together and knife fight thing. The only problem is in the style we do, like, one of the main targets is the arm, so it kind of just becomes like the dog trying to free itself from like the bear trap thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's funny.
Okay, so before you can do anything, everybody has to hack their own left hand off.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Cool.
One sec, can I grab a drink? Oh, gone. Sorry.
I was going to say, they still do it by gnawing, which is weird considering they're holding a knife.
they don't want to dull the blade.
Exactly.
It's the old Chinese proverb. Do not dull the blade on your own bone when you can dull it on theirs.
Bubbly.
So we should probably talk about the news, as that's what we do, and it's all about returning to normalcy. Does anybody have a story for the brief?
I do.
Cool. Ben, you spoke first, so...
Yeah.
Wait, I feel like a scenario where Ben immediately has a story is not returning to normalcy.
Ben, be more reticent.
Sorry. Yeah. Hold on a second. I sent the link, but I actually need to go to that link. Whatever. I remember what it is.
Yeah.
It's basically somebody who used to work at Valve confirmed that they are working on Half-Life 3 and Left 4 Dead 3. So Valve will soon release a game title that has the number 3 in it. Well, I don't know how soon it will be.
Yeah, but I was going to say.
Dota 3. It'll be Dota 3. Just to make everybody upset. Well, I guess when I say everybody, I mean the small portion of the population that doesn't play Dota.
Yeah.
I feel like this is one of those things where the headline sounds amazing until you actually read his statements, where he says he thinks Left 4 Dead 3 looks great.
And? Do we have a reason to believe that it won't be great?
I'm simply saying, when the most anticipated game for a long while, why the most anticipated anyways?
Last 9 years, yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. since Duke Nukem Forever, you know, became up. Yeah. When your commentary on what you saw is it looks great, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's okay, it's a game. Like, he wasn't speaking, like, was he speaking directly to press? Yeah, it was like an interview, but he's not PR trained. He's not like saying, oh, it's going to blow everybody away, you know, 8.0 out of 10. Like, it's,
well,
you know.
I guess what I mean is, I feel like the statement boils down to game exists.
Uh-huh. Well, no, it's no, and he made it in reference to Left 4 Dead 3. It's was like, guys, I saw Half-Life 3 and Left 4 Dead 3, and Left 4 Dead 3 looks great.
Uh-oh.
Continuing into, I'll give you one of his quotes. There's like a laser sight on my head right now. I don't know if I can talk about that, to be honest. I think it's kind of public knowledge that people know that Half-Life 3 is being worked on. So, yeah. Him alluding to the idea of a laser sight, and also recognizing the only weapon with a laser sight in Half-Life 2 is the crossbow, the sniper crossbow. Ooh. That shoots molten hot rebar. Yeah.
Wait, there's also the annoying, like, snipers that can apparently only aim in straight lines.
True.
Wait, can you aim in a curved line?
No, I said, like,
if you're in the comic Paul Wanted.
Yeah. Hey, man, he'll explain it.
Yeah. Or if you're Magneto trying
or
to protect.
Andy loves shooting in curved lines.
Oh, man. Have any of you seen Days of Future Past yet?
No, it's saying good.
It's pretty good.
Wait, does it have Morgan Freeman?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, you got my hopes up.
X-Men.
X-Men. So just the notion of a curved bullet brought that to my mind. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Magneto's in play, right? But yeah. Looking at this here, he continues. So, I mean, to go out on a limb, I would say, yeah, I did see some concept art for Half-Life 3. Somebody's knocking on my door right now. It seems like old news. I think everybody kind of knows it's being worked on.
Yeah.
What was it? There was a story a while back where we were talking about, like, hey, this popped up in some source code and, like, a picture of somebody's desk at Valve.
It was,
and, like,
an email list.
Yeah, it was, like, an email list.
I think it was T-shirts that they had made.
I heard it was crop circles.
Yeah, I just remember because all we talked about, I think, for 7 to 10 minutes was the idea that some people mount their monitors vertically.
Oh, the Siemens.
That was probably my doing.
Oh, man.
And if you're an artist, there might be value to it. If you're a software engineer, no.
Oh, I mean, what about it? Like the other way around, right? Wouldn't having it vertical let you see more code? Let's just do it again.
I'm only speaking for people at my work.
Uh-huh.
You want, it depends. Like, for me, I tend to comment at the end of a line.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I have the actual line, which can take up a fair amount of space, and then my description of what it does.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to do very wide coding.
Okay. Yeah, and I keep my monitor vertical so I can play Galaga at a moment's notice.
Right, and what I've seen people do, I've seen people either do one horizontal for that, and then one vertical for reading documents. I've also seen people do both of them vertical with the stands kind of on their side in the middle in order to, like, minimize the gap between them.
Mm-hmm. When I was taking a class in my degree, which is kind of like a radio television degree, something that one of our professors said, in the future, all monitors will be oriented vertically, because think about it. If you're trying to frame somebody, you want to get their whole body, and you want it to be, you know, it's like vertical like that. To frame, I was like, are you off your
Also, what's happening? Fuck movies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the human eye has a wider field of vision that has tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Half-Life 3 would be pretty nice.
I had a professor that referred to Google as the Google and YouTube as the YouTube. So these projections of future are not, you know, something you put a ton of stock in.
Yeah. See, the only thing I ever had crazy from my professors was just very bizarre relationship advice.
Interesting.
Now, Sonny, you gotta hit it and quit it.
He's got tenure. He's real
old. This was more like what my professor says. I meet wife. I ask her, you can cook? She says yes, so we get married.
Jesus.
Oh, wow.
All right, since we're on the subject, my grandfather gave me great advice on women. Don't spend all your money on fast women.
Okay.
Only some.
Your grandpa wins. That's pretty good. David, how about you? What's your story?
Sure. A assistant professor at Iowa State University has developed a new use for the Oculus Rift. He's concerned about the fact that in America it's really not economical for every chicken to be free-range chicken. So he wants to create what he calls second livestock, where you will basically strap an Oculus Rift to the chicken. In this sort of like, Cluckwork Orange type thing. And
you better trademark that, dude.
we'll pass the message along to this professor. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the chicken sees a virtual world of being stuck apparently in a pen at a farm.
A
slightly larger pen.
Right, and he controls his movement by pecking. So you get chickens that have incredibly thick neck muscles. Sorry, I saw the same story. So
yes.
So they've got a little array in front of them, and as they achieve goals, you know, as they blow up red barrels, they get a little bit of feed. And this is actually them automating various robots around the barnyard in order to do menial tasks like baling hay and whatnot. So it's an entirely chicken run operation.
And of course they need to put Omni treadmills there so that they can walk in any direction while they're in the Oculus Rift.
Mm-hmm. But
that's going to make them less fat, mm-hmm. So they're going to have to feed them twice as much.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the things that kind of confused me about this article, mm-hmm. is apparently for the demo he used a yoga ball that acts as a giant trackpad because somehow that simulates the movement of a chicken.
Well, it's going to pop.
Yeah, that does not seem very wise.
Yeah.
Trust me,
I know how easily yoga balls pop. I've taken scissors to plenty.
I'm actually hoping... I feel like if he wants to develop this, he really, though, needs to get the development team behind Goat Simulator,
mm-hmm.
involved on this.
Oh, no. Think of all the collateral damage.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not seeing a problem here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then they can start putting Oculus Rift on goats and have them play Goat Simulator?
Well, that sounds about right.
Just be a good way to get a headache.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird, like, I guess I should robot or link or whatever we're going to call the article. Mm. But halfway through, he apparently realizes how crazy he sounds and decides to juke. And he starts talking about how his purpose in this is that as a species, we need to carefully evaluate whether the direction... whether this is a good direction to go. It's not so much that virtual reality is lacking humanity as it's creating these safe environments where we're not actually exposed to anything harmful. Mm-hmm. I don't think would really be good for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, I too have seen The Matrix.
Yeah, so he takes it like one or two levels up. It's not about the chicken. It's about the chicken in your mind.
Well, here's the thing. What is he saying when he's referring to our species? Like, does he think he's a chicken?
I think he's saying that the point of this was not actually to advocate for video enabled chickens' rights, but actually to create like thought about the role of virtual reality in human humanness.
He's like a modern day barnyard Neal Stephenson.
Yeah, I feel like though really what he's showing by suggesting that you know virtual reality is just us creating safe, comfortable environments. What he's really saying is, you know, I haven't played Amnesia on the Oculus Rift.
I mean, regardless of what of experiences, it sounds like an Egelin solution. So,
wow.
I started out convinced that this was one of David's parody articles, and then he posted a link. So this is either a very elaborate fake.
Wait, I thought it was a fake one too.
No, this is actually
no. Check the link.
Okay, so. Man,
you cannot write this stuff.
The other question I feel like this raises is he's referring to this as second livestock, but how is a virtual world entirely full of animals any different from the actual Second Life?
Well, these ones don't have gigantic dicks. Yeah. They have cloaca. I love the chickenized Second Life logo that looks like it's so you know the Second Life logo is the hand with the eye in the palm of it. Except yeah. this yeah. one has a little beak coming off of it, so it looks like a hand turkey.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Oh. Yeah. Huh.
So this is my question, not to you know. Naysay, because it's clearly just a wonderful idea. But I wonder if you could put together how much it would cost to outfit every chicken on a farm with an Oculus Rift and an Omni treadmill, and compare that to how much it would cost to do a like real life free range, yeah, real life barn with chickens. It's got to be close to even.
I'm similarly, I'm kind of liking the implications for not only will we have, like, organic and free range, we'll have, like, virtual organic free range.
Well, I just want to meet the chicken that's, like, you know, gets this on and he's like, yeah, this feels about right. This seems accurate.
Seems legit.
I buy it.
So this joke that I'm working on is entirely a dead end, so can I just tell you, kind of show you how far I got?
Sure.
Hey, go ahead.
These new cyber clunk novels are getting weird. So, as in a cross between Cyberclunk and Cyberpunk.
Yes.
But never really. I can't make the two ends meet.
That's right. I was silent for so long on this story because I was trying to work out Hinect. I couldn't get Omni Treadmill. It's Agni Treadmill or anything.
Oculus Roost.
Well, let me throw out my last one. I do think something I would probably pay to see is. Oh, chicken plays Pokemon.
Yeah, why not do it with all barnyard animals? Why leave, you know, cows out? The Oculus Rift would probably at least fit them better to start.
Well, and that is one thing he actually advocates is that in order to do this, they should make a mini Oculus Rift.
Yeah, so in summary, don't go to Iowa State University.
Yeah.
I just love that, like... Like, at one point he actually says, like, he's talking about how, like, this probably wouldn't be realistic because it would be too expensive. It's like, yes, that's what's wrong with this suggestion.
Oh, gosh. Dennis, how about you? You got a story?
Yeah, it's a little more accounts and finances, but worth noting that the PS4 is already profitable for Sony. Which is noteworthy because that's not usually how system launches work. Manufacturers sell the consoles at a loss and hope to make that up on software sales and licensing agreements and everything like that. But I think Sony said up front they were going to try to go profitable from the start, and they've accomplished that. So interesting to see, and definitely a strategy that is much more in line with what, you know, like a Nintendo would do, mm-hmm. versus kind of their more traditional competition.
Yeah, Nintendo kind of takes the Apple model of let's just sell this thing at a profit to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how quickly Microsoft would have broken even on the 360 if it wasn't for the fact that all of them were made of poison and fated to die.
Yeah. Yeah, they were basically, you know, having to eat two sets of of 360s.
And then all those people who bought two of them. So maybe that cancels it out. I'm not even sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also saw a quick blurb. I didn't read into it, just the headline, but apparently they're now soon to be trying to expand to the China market. So if they're, you know, if they've already got a if they've already got their eggs in a line, I don't know. I can't do metaphors anymore. If they already have that metaphor, that implies they have their stuff together. Then I can imagine, you know, if they could, you know, be even semi-successful in China, that could really be profitable.
Yeah, yeah. I think Xbox is kind of there first, though. I don't know anything about launch dates, but I think Microsoft was the first to say they were going to go there, which will be interesting to see. It's interesting to see how that plays out. I think, Cole, you begged an interesting question. No console has had the Red Ring of Death yet. We haven't identified that yet.
There are a couple of people who are trying to make something into an issue, but I forget exactly what those things were. So those evaporated. Failed. What's that?
They apparently failed.
I mean, I guess.
Huh. Yeah.
That or Sony Black Ops got to them.
The wet works.
Why would you need games if your console won't turn on?
Finally, I've got my story here. So Valve activated Steam in-home streaming. I believe Windows. So Windows machines only right now can be, you know, can host the Steam stream. Blah. That's going to be very hard to say.
But, Steam stream.
Steam stream. Yeah. They rolled it out, and eventually Mac and Linux machines are going to be able to do the streaming as well. I tried it out. It actually works pretty well. As long as you can maintain a connection. I think there's something weird with my network. But it's pretty neat. There is, in my case, and I'm going to try and figure it out, a perceptible lag. So I was trying to play. So I've got that that Windows machine out in my living room, and I've got my Mac here in my office / second bedroom. And I tried streaming from that onto my Mac, and I pulled up the image just fine. There is a little bit of a perceptible lag in the mouse. So I was trying to play Gunbound, Gunpoint. There we go, Gunpoint. Which has a which does not have a Mac version, and my mouse was just a couple of frames behind where I was moving it, which put me off my game a little bit. But otherwise, that might just be an entirely, you know, like just a problem with the way that my, you know, computer works or my network works, and it just kind of happens to function like they say it's going to. It's kind of neat.
Nice. So like for like a turn-based strategy game or anything like that, this would be perfect.
Yeah. Or even, it just depends on how finicky you are with your mouse being where you want it to be, right when you want it to be there.
You don't actually need to click on things, do you?
And I'm saying, like, this is probably, you know, something approaching a 150 to 200 milliseconds kind of lag. So it's not, like, it's not catastrophic.
Exactly.
It's not catastrophic. Like, I just, I don't know. Some people are more sensitive to it than others, but, like, I can totally tell.
Yeah, so this is one of those things where they're like, oh my god, it works perfectly on our, you know, supercomputers that are hard linked to each other.
I think it has more to do with network speed than that. Well, I guess the hard linked part.
What's the word for directly combining? I don't know computer stuff.
Voltronic?
Voltronic. Yeah.
Is Steam Stream the actual name for it?
No, it's Steam in-home streaming is what it's called.
Okay, that's much better.
Yeah. If you do a horror game, it would be Steam Scream Streaming.
Sinful Steam Stream steals its circuits. sees as they say on streams.
I'll have none of this. I'm ashamed of all of you. Yeah.
It does seem kind of odd that, like, they released this and the initial release is not on Linux/Steam OS.
It's kind of crazy, but then again, my impression is that, like, right now their first priority is to get the Steam Box to be the recipient of the streaming, which it can totally do. If my Mac can stream, can stream to a Steam Box, can stream from the Windows machine, then they've met their first kind of goal, which is like, let's just get this thing happening inside a house.
Wait, but in most scenarios, though, wouldn't you want the Steam Box to be the one streaming?
The Steam Box to be the one streaming?
Yes.
Like I said, this is going to be really hard.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. I was just saying what I thought sounded right.
This will be their version of the Kinect, where they're like, hey, here's some really cool capability. We have no idea really how to use it. So if people could kind of, that's why they got it out there. They just want to, people kind of get on that, use it, and figure out why it's cool and get back to us.
What's great is, like, it's totally game independent. In fact, I'd be curious, like, if I linked something to my Steam library from, like say I bought it like an old game off of GOG, like that, uh-huh. they have a much lower, Mac to Windows ratio. Like, there are plenty of games that I would love to be able to play at my computer, but am not able to play at my desk computer, but I'm not able to because that's a Mac. My living room computer is a Windows. I wonder if I link that into Steam, if I'm able to stream that, because really all it's doing is taking the video out of Steam and then just sending that to a different place in your house. Like, right down to the point of, if you pause the game in one place and go to another computer, you can pick it up right where it is. Like, it's really just making your other computer the monitor for that game.
They might not. Are you sure that's how they do it?
I think so. Like, the one requirement that the recipient computer needs to have is a graphics card that can do H.264 decompression.
Okay.
And that's a relatively low threshold. So the way that I'm led to believe that all of this works is that basically all of the math is being done on the server side, which would be the Windows machine that is running the game, and the video output is being compressed into H.264 to be sent over the network and then decompressed, de-encoded or whatever, onto a different machine. So that's how you can play Dark Souls 2 on a Mac, which I could totally do like right now.
That'd be interesting to know how it works, because I know Windows has a lot of tools that can do very good, like remote desktop stuff like that. They've got a lot of stuff for that, and I would think just straight up, taking pictures, I would think that'd be too slow, but I have no idea. So
I think that this is some just like really really fancy what is it, like USSL into a machine. You can do a VPN. Not a VPN, right. A VNC. Like, I think that this is like a VNC with so little overhead. Like, just it's optimized for trying to get it as close to frame perfect as possible.
And then that might make sense why it's currently Windows only.
Yeah. And I think that as they just basically they just have to build this into the Steam client in such a way that it remains lightweight.
Yeah.
I know, it's exciting. It's an exciting time. I long for the day when, you can just have one box in your house that does everything, and then everything else is just kind of the head for that. I just long for the day of the headless box, man.
Yeah. No, I still say I will say the next generation is truly arrived when I don't have to plug stuff in anymore. So you can give it to me all in the same box. That's great. I want to be able to set that box down next to any TV or monitor and have it just kind of sync up versus, connecting all the wires.
Good luck with that.
ordered a a Belkin Thunderbolt dock for my laptop here.
That sounds like something out of Star Trek.
It's pretty cool. So it is basically the idea is when I get home and when I set down my computer to turn it on, I have to plug in. Let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have to plug in 5 things in order to make it like do everything it needs to do. HDMI, one lead from a USB hub, one lead from my external hard drive array, and then also the power and my audio, right? And so what this is, it's a little aluminum box that it takes a Thunderbolt, which is the, you know, what newer Macs use for really fast data transfer, and it has all those ports connected to it. So you just plug all that stuff into this dock thing, and then when I get home and set down my laptop, all I have to do is plug in the power and the Thunderbolt, and then I'm up and running.
Can it? Does it split off additional Thunderbolt connections?
Yes, so it can be upstream and downstream for Thunderbolt as well.
Nice, because one of the annoying things is, I guess, most Mac monitors use Thunderbolt, right?
Yeah, and most any Thunderbolt monitor will have a downstream Thunderbolt as well, so you can just daisy chain as many as you need.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
This is not going to end well for my apartment space.
Yeah, but I picked up this little dongle, this little dingus, because I want to have a Thunderbolt Ethernet adapter, because we're going to be doing those live streams, going to need to get video out as quickly as possible, and also fuck plugging all those things in. So I'm totally with you, Dennis. Like, just let me set this thing down, or let it just be so like built into my entire system. Yeah.
I was about to complain and say, but you still have to plug something in. But then I figured that might be a little far.
Yeah, I took it from 5 to 2. So yeah. Good.
There is, you know, wireless charging, and you know, theoretically you could do wireless stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, going to have all the problems that wireless currently has.
So I'm totally not this guy. Like, it's going to make me sound like a complete nut. But the idea of like wireless power, all that says to me is like, how quickly do you want to get cancer? And like, I totally recognize, you know, the amount of cosmic radiation we are buffeted with every single day is far more significant than even the Wi-Fi that is, you know, streaming from, you know, six feet away from my junk.
It's also non-ionizing radiation.
Yeah, yeah. So I recognize that. However, there is something a little spooky about the idea of, like, I just set this thing on here, and, oh, this cord where if I put it in my mouth, it would kill me? Now that's just in the air around me? Just, like, you get those intrusive thoughts, right? You just think, like, as you're plugging in your cell phone for that, like, huh, if I put that in my mouth, I would die. Huh, if I put that on the like, no, don't do that. It's going to look like you're doing it.
Okay.
No, I realize how bad that sounds. No, you can just get those every once in a while. Just kind of like, huh, if I did that thing and it really sucked, wouldn't it?
That sounds like a Fox News 9 story. Find out how teenagers are killing themselves with a new trend called courting.
Courting.
They said he wanted to join the cloud.
Man, that sounds like a terrible alarmist sci-fi kind of thing. Like just teenage death cults. Like we're all joining the cloud. Snapchatting their junk just means cutting their junk off.
Oh God!
What? Ooh, ooh.
Sending my junk to the cloud.
I Snapchatted my junk. Also, it's not attached to me when I Snapchatted it.
Heavy
emphasis on the snap.
Yeah, you just freeze it with an ice cube and then smack it with a hammer.
I have a parting question for this story that we might still be talking about.
Yeah.
Which game was it that had the short swords shortages?
Dark Souls, I think.
Is that Dark Souls 2? Yeah. All right. So if that's on the Steam stream, you can have a Steam stream of short sword shortages. Just saying.
Steam stream, short sword stream?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
She streams Steam streams by the seashore?
Yeah,
sure. By the shore.
But to make sure you get a good deal, though, because you don't want to get reamed on the Steam stream of the short sword shortages.
Good God.
No, we're just making rhymes.
The grind. So people have been playing games. People be all about playing them games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, you've been away for long. Do you have games to talk about?
Oh man. Yeah. So the one I won't call it an upside, but definitely the major way I filled my time while I was in the hospital waiting for my next test was on the Vita. So I put in a ton of time playing Vita games.
Video games.
Yes.
Vitamina video games.
Yeah, so I'll talk you through those if you don't
mind. Regale us with tales.
Yeah. I think I mentioned the last time I was actually on the show. Thanks for having me back, by the way, guys.
You know.
was the new Heroes Within pack for the Star Wars pinball, which is really pretty good. I think last time I talked about how there's this relationship that you have with every new pinball table, or at least that I've gone through, where it's like initially it's really awesome and there's all this cool new stuff, and so you're just wowed by all of it. And then you realize that you kind of suck at it, so you get mad and decide that you don't like the table and it's poorly designed and it's not worth your time. And then you slowly kind of, well, maybe if I try, and then you slowly figure it out and figure out how to, you know, how to play that individual table, and then you go back to thinking it's really good. And for three of the four new tables in the pack, that is absolutely true. And I successfully got through, while I was in the hospital, the "this is awesome, this sucks," and back to the "this is awesome" stage. Mm-hmm. So that's the Han Solo table, which is, it replaces traditional like missions with just different multi-ball modes, which is really cool.
You have to shoot first.
No, there's literally a handshot first mode, and it is amazing. So, like, it's actually kind of cool. They've got like a line of targets, like a shooting gallery that's on a rotating rack at the very back of the table, and you have to turn a wheel to rotate them into position to shoot, and then hit a ramp to shoot them. And if you hit all of them, you can get Greedo to pop up, and then you shoot him, and literally there's just this big screen that says Greedo Han shot first. So I was pleased to see that. The other table that's good is the droids table. So that's C-3PO and R2-D2, and it's set on the back of the Sandcrawler. And that's just got a bunch of a lot of ramp shooting is kind of the focus there, which is cool. And the missions are less time-based and more kind of just more difficult objectives versus placing a time limit on it, which is good. Then the other one, there's, like I said, three that were good. Let me think here. The one that's bad is the Heroes of the Force table, which is just, they tried to cram too many ideas into a table, and it just really, really feels like they rushed it out and didn't give it the level of polish that it should have gotten. So just, you know, it's really difficult to start missions, which usually, you know, that's the central thing you're trying to do on a pinball table. And they just made it way too difficult. The kind of side outs are way too thirsty. So it's really easy to lose your ball in a way that you just can't really control. And then they've got all these little features here and there that feel just really half baked and not very well developed. So that's sad to see. And it's one of those things where I kept on going back to it. I've managed to get a score of 100 million or higher on every single table except for that one. And so I really kept on coming back to it. And I was like, I just need to figure it out. Like there's gotta be something I'm missing. And eventually I just came to the conclusion that it sucks, which is sad. But, that this pack had four tables, whereas the other, the original and the first expansion had three. So I'll accept one kind of dud of a table in the three. Oh, and then the final good table is one that's just themed after A New Hope. So it's kind of playing through all the different parts of the movie in order, which is cool.
So do you have to do the whole like bump the table thing? Is that a thing?
Yeah, you can. And it's really funny because one of the places that Jen and I stopped when we were in San Francisco was a pinball arcade. And I found myself actually like bumping the table from what I had learned playing the fake pinball games on the Vita, which was really, really weird because that's never something I would have thought to do on my own. But they've there's just the left stick, if you nudge it in a certain direction, will bump the table. And really the only thing that I use it for is if it goes down kind of the side pocket for an automatic out. Sometimes if you bump it at the right time, it'll knock it out of that. Otherwise, I've never used it to like do any big adjustments. It's mostly just to avoid the outs.
Hey, Dennis, I'm going to ask you a question, and this will sound like basic first principles, but I would like you to take maybe a couple sentences and answer it for me, just because I feel like this is an area where I'm lacking as a person. So,
sure.
Pinball, what the fuck? Because
discuss.
Background. I like pinball. I like flashing lights and very loud noises. Even like a lot of the theming is pretty cool. Like, hey, on the Terminator 2 machine, you pull a trigger and that's what launches the ball. I've also been known to play some spinball in my time, comma Sonic. But it seems like you're into this enough to kind of like, even the Star Wars stuff aside, explain to me like what's appealing about pinball itself. Because I feel like there's a level beyond like, hey, I will put 50 cents into the Twilight Zone machine when I'm at PRGE, and I'm going to play this on my Vita when I'm bedridden. So like, just can you just give me that rundown?
I really honestly don't know. I kind of stumbled ass backwards into it the last time I hung out with Ben, when we went to the Pinball Hall of Fame, and we just spent a bunch of time there and had a ton of fun. And we actually had talked about buying ourselves an actual pinball table until we realized there was nowhere in our house to keep it. But then, the original Star Wars table came out for free. And I've also just, anytime I see a pinball player, because pinball tables pop up in the randomest places. So anytime I see one, I'll do a play, and it's really just become something that I really enjoy. So go figure, I guess. What makes a good table versus a bad table is how much control you feel like you have over it, first off. And then second off, just kind of the depth of the objectives that it gives you. So, every table ultimately is designed to just eat your money, right?
Yeah.
And it's, so there's, no matter how well you play, there's always going to be a point where you just lose the ball and there's nothing you can do about it. And that is, there's something very Zen about that. Hence it's Zen pinball, I guess. I don't know. there's something appealing there for me. But just kind of the ride there and feeling like when I do lose that, I can at least think through and say, okay, well, I got greedy and, tried to hit a target without really lining up the shot, or,
Are you saying you didn't stay on target?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't talked that much about, I feel like I've talked plenty about pinball on the show. I don't know what verbs to use around pinball. I flipped too aggressively. But just, so feeling like, you are able to influence what's happening on the table with a high degree of precision versus, on the tables that I've played that I haven't enjoyed, it feels like, I hit the button and pretty lights go off, but I didn't feel like I had a ton of control over where I was shooting or when I lost the ball. So that's the first thing that makes a table good or bad. And then the second thing is that the depth of objectives. So, every table has ramps and bumpers and lights and everything. But the good tables I've found kind of have a really intuitive and coherent way to kind of activate the special modes and activate the missions and everything like that, where you kind of understand, okay, if I hit this ramp three times, it opens up that I have to hit in a certain amount of time, which I can then do X, which leads to Y, and it all just flows together. Whereas bad tables will, they might have different elements, but it doesn't feel like they build on one another. They just kind of sit next to each other.
Mm-hmm. So the old pinball for Windows, that used to come with it. Was that a good table or
it's a
bad?
Fucking thing? Masterwork.
Space
and
Cadet
I rue every day that I'm not able to play it.
I wonder,
have
they ever made a physical? That has to be something somebody's made.
Oh man,
a physical Space Cadet pinball.
That'd be amazing. And there's nothing on that table that isn't completely doable in real life. Like the Star Wars tables, they take some liberties, but the Space Cadet pinball table would be really easy to replicate.
Hmm.
And it's also, I'd also love to see it when the physics on that table, if you played it enough, there's really only like three different trajectories the ball can take, when it hits any one ramp or anything like that. So it was very limited, I feel like, physics.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see for sure.
Yeah.
But I just totally BS'd all that. But that's kind of what I've found appealing about pinball in general.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And I kind of put you on the spot for that. Like, hey, defend why this thing is worth attention. But I'm just curious because, like, I've run into enough instances where it's like I've been around serious pinball people. I mean, like, serious pinball people. And, like, it's almost like a different kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a documentary called Special When Lit that's very good on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a group of people on there that is a little too serious about it and that I would not aspire to be a part of. But yeah, like I said, I totally stumbled ass backwards into really, really enjoying pinball. Oh, the one other thing, cool thing that happened on vacation is we found in a random pizza joint a Theater of Magic pinball table. And sorry, this is probably sounding super nerdy, but that is one of the tables that's emulated in the Zen pinball program that I have. So I'd played it virtually.
So you knew it?
I knew it, yeah. And it's obviously popular, well thought of enough to be made into a virtual pinball table. And I looked at it and, we played it and had some fun and Jen actually beat me. we were playing competitively. But it was, it was as good as it was, in virtually and kind of very faithful I guess I'm talking about that in reverse. The virtual table is very faithful to how it feels in real life. Okay. There we go.
So is this like the pinball equivalent of the book Whiz Batter?
No, because the pinball, the virtual equivalent is free, so that's always better.
Yeah.
But I looked it up afterwards, and I'm going to Google just to make sure.
That's a pretty machine.
It is. All that's up right now are parts as I do the Google shopping. But I want to say that we looked it up, and I found one of the tables for sale, and it was like for $30,000.
Jesus.
So that's just kind of sitting in a pizza joint. which again, that's kind of part of how I've fallen ass backwards into really liking pinball is anytime I see a random table in a random place, it's fun to check it out and then look it up and find out, what's the story behind this thing?
Yeah. Man, we got to get you out to Portland.
yeah. That's
pilgrimage.
I was there and I want to say, I think we almost went to Ground Control and didn't wind up actually making it out. But
when is the Portland Retro Gaming Show?
October 18th.
We could make a pilgrimage then.
Yeah, it's I didn't mean to over talk on that, but there is a place in Chicago which would be the more realistic place, but I forget what it's called. It's like Galloping Ghost. I think Galloping Ghost, which like one side of it is like a pinball museum and the other side of it is like an arcade. And it's like one of those things where you just pay a flat fee at the opening and then you just kind of go in and do whatever you want. Although I'm not sure if they serve alcohol.
There is a place.
Apparently a pubcade opening in downtown Cincinnati somewhere.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Nice. Yeah, I want to say out in one of the malls surrounding Cincinnati, there is also an arcade with some pinball tables. So I've looked into going there. Anyway, yeah. So I'm sorry. This is pinballs are video games, right?
Yeah, I think it totally counts. I mean,
yeah,
pinballs are video games in the same way that Johann Sebastian Joust is a video game.
Oh, I need to. So, we're going to be playing that at the office on Wednesday night.
Oh, nice. Dude.
You
keep
too.
Keep the fire department on speed dial. I could see that getting pretty intense.
Well, the fire department is one floor above us. So. Or at least the fire department training place.
That's funny.
Yeah. I think people can triangulate where my office is now. So I guess... Good.
It'll either be the shortest fire ever or the most ironic fire ever.
This isn't a drill.
our elevator is complete horseshit garbage, and we always joke like, well, at least if we get stuck, which has happened before. I've been stuck in it 2 times. The fire department is always right there to get us out.
Oh no!
I feel like after the first time, I would take the stairs.
Oh yeah, but sometimes if you're like trying to bring like a bunch of gear up, which we are often doing, it's kind of like, well, okay. We're just gonna go.
Yeah. Cross your fingers.
So you should put the gear in the elevator, press the floor, and then run up to make sure that kid's there.
Well, no, you wouldn't have to run up. You just put the gear into it with a note saying, "Hey, don't touch this." Da, 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 da. And then you would go up there and then just call the call it from your, you know, from your preferred floor of choice.
Nice. I can just see a bunch of fire, you know, firemen trainees being like, "Oh, I can't wait to go. What the hell is this?"
Some bunch of nerds with some camera gear.
Oh no, they would get the camera gear without you if you went up the stairs.
Oh yeah,
so I guess this is mine now.
Bunch of gear without nerd.
Where are these nerds?
I know. I something I never thought I would actually see. The local when I was down in Huntsville, the local like artist commune was old cotton mill. And so the only elevator was like a freight elevator. So they actually had like the old school like elevator attendant thing.
Hmm. Nice.
Was that by any chance near Ye Old Coffee Shop? The only coffee shop that ends every word with an E?
I do not know.
All right.
Except coffee. And they end it with that
what?
Except coffee. They end that with a Y.
With a Z-Man, they're trying to cater to the younger generation.
Combo breaker.
Yeah. Do you remember, the hard-to-knock shop?
Yeah.
Shop is spelled with an E.
So it was spelled hard, H-A-R-D, ta, T-A, knock, as spelling, but shop, P-P-E. Yeah, and that was the place almost, where you could rent large white T-shirts
and buy drugs.
I know, my understanding is they actually officially got busted for like being a front for drugs.
Yeah, like there were a whole bunch of places along that stretch that were just obviously fronts for drugs.
Yeah. Angels 2?
Yep, Angels 2 specifically is what I'm thinking of.
It's like just ketchup in the convenience store, and that's it. It's like, okay, you're really turning a profit with this. All right,
yeah. All right, okay.
It is a college town, so, you know.
I mean, I would stop in there to buy vitamin waters. It was okay.
Quote, unquote, vitamin water.
Yeah, I was just saying, I stopped there to buy cocaine, so.
Oh, man, Bright Lights, big college town.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, so was Star Wars Pinball about it for you, Dennis, or was there other magic?
The other game that I played was Velocity Ultra, and this was actually really, really good. So again, free PS Plus game, and just downloaded it because I was out of stuff to play and needed something new because I was bored out of my skull. And it's really good. So I think they call it an R-type shooter, like a, you know, Galaga style, back and forth across the screen, shoot at aliens kind of deal.
Yeah, it's like Gradius or, you know, Raiden.
Yeah.
I guess not Raiden. Raiden is vertical. So, oops.
Yeah. So the gimmick on this one is that you can teleport around the screen. So you just hit square and then, you know, move the left stick to choose where you want to teleport to and then mm-hmm. release, and you'll kind of zap around the screen, gives the action just a really good... The word that I came up for it was zippy. Like, it's just a really good zippy feel to the action. And they kind of designed the levels to reflect that mechanic so that, you know, there's compartments that you need to jump between, and you know, you need to jump over here to hit the switch and then back real quick. And you actually have to manage, you know, where you are on the screen with how fast the screen is scrolling, because it's very possible to like get greedy, jump to get some extra points over in a side box. But then in the time you've spent in that box, the rest of the play area has scrolled out of, you know, out of your ability to jump back to it, and you get crushed. Mm-hmm. So it's
like the moving levels in Mario, kind of.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's a great analogy. And so that's you know, your objective throughout all of it is to get survivor pods, which is essentially like the coins of any given level. And you're zipping around to collect all them, and you're judged on your time, how many survivor pods you get, and then the amount of damage you deal to enemies. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of this nice balance of you want to get through it quickly, but you also want to be a completionist, all while obviously avoiding and destroying the enemies. And you kind of have to balance those three things to get a good score. And it works really, really well. My one complaint is that they start to get away from the zippy and into the puzzly in later levels, where it's like you have to go through things in the right order. They give you the zipping around is short form teleporting, and then there's long form teleporting they introduce, where you can kind of drop a beacon at a point in a level and then teleport back to that. Mm-hmm. Which you can do as many times as you want, which obviously will affect your time score, but overall it's relatively low consequence. But it really, as you would imagine, slows things down, and, introduces all these branching path puzzles, that aren't that fun. Like it's, well, I can choose to go left or right. Chose right. Shit, that was the wrong way. Okay, I guess I'll go left. Now I can go left or right. I'll go left this time. Well, shit, that was the wrong way. Okay, I'll go, and there's not a lot of fun in that. But its core kind of zip around the screen, teleport, and shoot mechanics are a lot of fun.
Hmm.
Yeah.
How quickly does it turn into bullet hell? Because I could see that mechanic being abused to just have as many projectiles on screen as possible and making it so that the safe zone, as opposed to kind of like moving fluidly, just kind of like, oh, you just have to know that the safe zone is going to be over here now. Better warp to it, or too bad, so sad.
Yeah, well, there's definitely, it's spikes. So there's kind of, it's actually surprisingly light on enemies most of the time. So you'll face enemies in small waves, but very rarely does it get to the point where it just fills up the screen with fire. A lot more emphasis is placed on the zipping around. However, when it when it gets there, it definitely gets there, and there are definitely sections where the answer is to teleport away, dummy. And I kind of been butting my head against a wall until I realized, oh yeah, I can do this thing that will kind of get me out of trouble. But never, at least to date in the game, has it had like a boss where it's like, you need to be in this one box, go there now.
Mm-hmm.
So normally you can kind of maneuver around the bullets, but there are definitely situations where it's to your advantage to use your teleport. But that said, obviously, if you're in a position that you like, it can be worthwhile to kind of try to ride out and around the bullets versus just bailing on a position.
Okay.
Yeah. So they've also, I think there's a game called Surge that is also free on PlayStation Plus right now that's by the same people. And I'll be interested to try that. But those were really the two games that I sunk the most time into while I was in the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. And I sent the developers a nice tweet on Twitter saying, hey, thanks for a great game. It's getting me through a rough hospital stay. And they were very nice, got back to me and stuff. So points to them. It's always nice to see, people be responsive on Twitter.
Definitely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, sounds like you've been busy.
Yeah, that's a shit ton of time I had to fill. So
for real. Thank God for video games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
All right. Yeah. So my big one was Dead Space 2. I beat it yesterday.
Mm.
So nice. It was fine. It was like Dead Space 1. It was scary. So it's good in the sense that it very much achieved the objectives that it set out to achieve. But I think at the end of the day, it's not really a game that I really would want to play more than I have in the past 2 weeks. So, yeah, I played it and beat it and stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like a love-hate relationship. Like the aesthetic is beautiful. Like there's a lot of parts of the game that are just gorgeous, despite it being, very gory and very graphic as well. But at the same time, it's like there were a lot of moments where they could have done things that might have been cooler, and they didn't. There were some missed opportunities. There's definitely a lot of repetition. There's definitely kind of some mistakes as far as what it's preparing you to do as far as when you level up and kind of juking what they were foreshadowing. And yeah, I don't know. So pretty much any sort of criticism I have of the game would kind of wander into spoiler territory, so I have to speak in somewhat vague terms about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah. What did you think of the last act?
Yeah, so I know last week you prefaced it with saying the second half was better than the first half, or it got better.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the case. I don't know. I don't know. I played it, I guess, kind of quickly, so I don't know. It kind of seemed relatively the same for me. There was like one glimmer of hope towards the end where I thought it was going to do something cool, and it kind of didn't. But there was a nice part at the end, though.
Nemesis?
No, that I was not so happy about because I do not think they had properly motivated you to use stasis at all before that point, and then it became quite critical for you to have the stasis ability.
Yeah, that's a really weird. That's a really hard thing to like lean on. That would be like if in BioShock they really didn't encourage you to use like the ice plasmid, and then like one of the final bosses would require it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or all of a sudden BioShock the beast became really critical.
Doesn't require you to use the ice plasmid.
Right. But it'd be like
that's the point.
I'm
following now.
Yeah, it'd be like if they're next to final boss or final encounter required profligate use of it. So like if you'd been playing through using stasis, like as a means of crowd control, it would have been perfectly fine. However, because there are so many valid ways to play, you know, that them railroading you into this thing that you might not have been prepared for statistically from a character knowledge, point of view, even more so than like a player knowledge point of view, then I could see where that would be really, really lame and would not ring true.
And then you had played the first Dead Space, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So there are enemies in that absolutely require you to use stasis. So it's a little, maybe this is a little metagame, but do you think you maybe should have known better because the last game kind of put you in that place?
Had I not played it 8 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think which enemies were that. Was that for the first one? I feel like spoilers are probably lifted on the first one. But if you haven't played that, I guess skip ahead. But are you talking about the creatures that are covered in black goo that move very quickly?
Yeah. So I don't remember if it was black goo or like blue electricity, but they were kind of normal enemies, but that were like caffeinated.
Yeah, that moved very quickly.
Move all right. So you first had to hit him with stasis.
Okay, so those enemies are not in the game at all, you know? Huh. Yeah, and Dead Space 2 at least, so.
Interesting.
Yeah. I still feel like that if that was a critical skill, then they should have foreshadowed that, I think, to some degree. But
at least in combat, because there are places where you have to use it for like navigation.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like it very much falls in those lines, like in the original game, that the stasis is for puzzle solving and my guns are for shooting. Mm-hmm. And that's, they kind of don't intersect unless you're in a real tight spot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. Some other pet peeves I had is like, so in this one, I don't know if they had this in the first one or not, but each of the suits that you wear have a individualized perk. So, like, one might be you get a discount at a store. One might be that your stasis is better. And they do a good job about stacking some of the perks of the suits. Like, I think it's, like, the their damage effectiveness is stacked or whatever. But those perks don't translate. So, like, if you change suits, you lose the perk that you had before, which I was kind of disappointed by, I guess. Since it was, they said that one of the things remained the same, but the other did not. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It was just small pet peeves. I don't know. I mean, if you like the first one, then you can play this. It's definitely a refinement of that, and it's, you know, it's at least just as good as that one. So it would be worth playing. But if you're not into horror games, and again, as far as like, it's interesting comparing this to like Silent Hill, because this is definitely definitely contrasts with that, where it's like this is very much immediate shock horror, you know, and like mm-hmm. and with an emphasis on like gore and very grotesque images, you know. Mm-hmm. So, whereas like Silent Hill a lot of times go the psychological route, you know, or there's none of that in this, at least. But
yeah, well, and also with the mechanics, like the, you know, Silent Hill, if I remember from playing Silent Hill 2, you basically push a button to lock on to your enemies and shoot at them, whereas this is very much kind of skill-based shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like this is more about like tension and hold your breath as you hope that you make these three charges that you have in your plasma cutter count.
Yeah.
And so it's more Resident Evil 4 in its own way, which is, you know, it's incredibly stressful because you kind of have to be on and engaged, whereas
It's like if you took the dog part of the Maze Garden and stretched that out for an entire game. That's what this game is like.
Yeah.
We're saying, oh, shit, every minute.
Yep.
So was the third one well-received?
It wasn't, but I kind of suspect that it might actually be good, or that it might be worth a chance at looking at.
So pretty much everyone gave it a bad review except for Polygon, which gave it like a 9.7 or something. Or it gave it like a really absurdly high review. Mm-hmm. But like everywhere else gave it like a 7 or a 6, you know. So
which 7 is the Shangri-La Valley of survival horror games. Like, yeah. like 7 is where those comfortably rest at. So that's part of the reason why I feel like, hey, that might actually be worth looking at.
I didn't realize these were survival horror games. I thought they're kind of just action games that happen to have some horror.
I mean, like on the spectrum, they lean more closely to you know, horror than just regular action. But yeah, or more towards action than just straight up horror. Go ahead, Ben.
There's no deeper. I mean, there's a story to it or whatever, but there's no like deeper narrative. It's very much just like a fun house. You know, you walk 3 feet, something pops out at you, you kill it. You walk another 10 feet, and then something else pops out.
Wait. What fun house do you go to?
I murder. Well, ones that don't last because I murder everybody in there. No, I don't know.
Yeah. Like it's, you know. Just because it lacks kind of like the symbolism or the psychological aspect doesn't mean it's not. Yeah.
It serves a different purpose.
Yeah.
So you just have to check what you're going for before you play it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, so, I mean, that's why I don't really begrudge it too much, is because it very much achieves what it sets out to do. So from that standard, you know, it's a pretty solid game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my issue with it is I would rather not play a game that terrifies me every minute. You know?
Well, I'm happy you saw through to the end, though, because I feel like it does tell a really good story. Like, I like the story of Dead Space 2, especially more than Dead Space 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You sound so disappointed.
After the podcast, I will share two grievances I have with this that are also giveaway parts of the story. So
okay, cool. So yeah, I'll make a note for that.
Put a button in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we'll have a little bit of a Dead Space 2 spoiler sesh after the credits.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, you play anything else?
I started Alpha Protocol, but that will be for something else. So
yes, it will. Well, I mean, we can say. That
or you can just go back and listen to podcasts from a year ago. So either way,
something like that. Yeah. No. So Ben will be joining us on the Watch Out for Fireballs extrasode, where we are talking with Chris Avalone, one of the lead designers and writers on Alpha Protocol, to ask some questions. And so it's a man, that is a good game, dog. That is good. I'm so sorry that you recommended it so highly, and I just kind of like sat on it. I bought it, but I sat on it.
It's all right. We'll discuss it more in fervor tomorrow.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. Yeah.
This will be the third time that Chris is on the show, right?
Second. He did Fallout 2, the episode for Fallout 2.
Oh, yeah,
maybe. Go ahead.
Dennis brought this up. Watch Out for Fireballs is a retro games podcast, correct?
Yes.
All right. Alpha Protocol is not exactly a retro game, right?
Alpha Protocol is part of the Wolf Initiative, the Watch Out for Lens Flare series that was funded by our Kickstarter. So, right. You know, we are redefining what retro is. Full stop.
Right.
No, but
it's the new retro. Yeah.
Like just now, some games from early on in the Xbox 360 run are kind of fair game, but we try and run the gamut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool.
Retro's what you make of it.
Oh, speaking of, while we're announcing things, I didn't talk about it today, but I started playing BioShock Infinite in preparation for that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
How long do we have? I still need to force myself to play through BioShock.
I penciled it in for the end of June, just because of my schedule.
Yeah, let's try and stick to that. I have a copy of BioShock staring me in the face right now. Yeah. So that'll be what I start after tomorrow.
Cool.
Nice.
It is really profound to me the degree to which I don't want to play BioShock.
But just because of fear? Or...
I know. I feel like the first one, at least for me, did not age well.
Have you played it before?
This is part of the problem. I've played about halfway through, and I don't know. I feel like there's nothing in it that would make me ever want to replay it. So the fact that I'm going to have to replay half of it.
I would
say see it through.
Yeah.
That's a game where the second half is better than the first half, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's an interesting statement. But
Would you disagree?
No, I wouldn't disagree. It's just not what people usually say.
Would other people disagree? I want somebody who disagrees with that statement to talk to me right now. Because, like, if I think of, like, the best three parts of the game, they're all in the second half of the game.
I like Sander Cohen's place.
If I think of the best three parts of the game, they're all in the second half of the game.
Okay. Yeah. Given that I just recently played it for Watch Out for Fireballs, I would probably do well to remember what sequence things happened in. But, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily disagree, however. But, let's clarify the term. So we're aiming to do a bonus level about BioShock Infinite, because that's one we said we were going to do a long, long time ago, back when the initial...
About a year and 2 months ago.
Yeah. Just about. when that was bound to come out. We should probably talk about if we're going to do Burial at Sea as well.
See, and that's the thing, is my understanding was that the two worlds were completely separate. Now my understanding is that at least in some...
Finish that sentence. Let's just, you know, not say anything like that.
Yeah. But so just to clarify, any playing of the old games is purely extracurricular on your guys' part, because the topic of these of this episode is going to be BioShock Infinite itself.
Yes. Having played the Infinite, though, I think it would behoove everybody to play the first one as well.
I mean, it seems like a good idea in general as a person who plays games to be literate in that, but
But not necessarily the second.
Well, no, I've heard really good things about the second, and
the second one's fine, but you don't need to do it for the podcast.
Yeah. So
the one thing I'll say is the number of times I've tried to aim down the sights and fired a plasmid instead is infuriating.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just because I need to be playing on, you know, computer instead of PS3. But
does Infinite have aim down the sights?
Yeah.
I was gonna say I thought it did.
But that's getting into bonus level territory.
Just about, yeah. So we're shooting to do that around the end of June. We'll see if we stick to it. I don't know.
We may or may not do a bonus level sometime or not sometime around June. That is or is not around BioShock Infinite.
Dave, what you been playing?
I've not been playing a great deal, actually. I'm kind of in between games right now. I've, you know, continued to be playing Fallen London, but, you know, that's really kind of a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kept on playing Fistful of Frags.
Yep.
Fistful of, yeah. That's like in itself a tongue twister. But,
Dennis seemed confused, so why don't you give a brief recap of what that is?
It's basically a Wild West deathmatch game. It's a free... Originally, it was a Steam mod. Now it's standalone, still free. And it trades on, like, the crazy mechanics of, like, old-school weapons, and in particular, everything tends to be very inaccurate and, you know, slow rates of fire, slow reloads.
Gotcha, okay.
So, it's still a great game, although I will say, I don't know, like, I don't know if it's just been kind of like I've been in a string of bad games, but I feel like I'm seeing much more where there's some issues with its balancing.
Okay.
The two big things I'm noticing is, like, some of the, you know, you start out with, like, a selection of weapons you can just select, and that's where you'll spawn with. And then there's chests around that reset periodically that, you know, are of a certain rarity, and basically that gives you higher tier weapons. And I would say, like, I feel like they trade a little bit too highly on, like, some of the higher tier weapons are just, like, overtly much more powerful.
Huh.
So, like, you know, a revolver, a standard revolver would, say, take, like, 2 to 3 shots to, like, maybe 2 to 3 body shots to kill someone, whereas, like, the most powerful revolver one-shots you.
Huh.
So it's just things where, like, it can create a lot of situations where, like, you can't win a scenario because you're just around the corner and immediately get dropped.
So it encourages people to kind of ambush others.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then the other thing I've found is my weapon of choice is the sawed-off shotgun, which is a lot of fun. And I can understand why it's the way it is, because kind of its big stick is it's you don't have to follow the normal rules of the game because there is no inaccuracy when you're firing a cone. Therefore, feel free to, like, run around at full speed. But the problem is it's a double barrel, and you need 3 shots to reliably kill someone. So you just can't reliably, you know, take someone out.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's just stuff like that where it's still a good game. It's just, I feel like it needs a little bit of polish in terms of, like, bringing everything up together.
Tell me if I'm out of line, because I haven't actually played this game, but it seems to me, from looking at videos and from hearing you talk about it last week, that the point of this isn't so much balance and precision as much as it is spectacle.
Yeah, and there's definitely that, and, like, I will say, actually, I should probably back up and say, like, there's very legitimately a degree to which I'm quote-unquote playing it wrong, in that you get a certain number of points based on when you make a kill based on what weapon you use, with lower quality weapons, less effective weapons giving you more points. Whereas I'm playing it pretty much ignoring that, and I only care about getting kills.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I guess that is fair, that there's a certain degree to which maybe the balance would be better if you know, if you cared about the score. I still, though, feel like, and I guess I'd say I think you are right. There is an element of that. I think it's more, it's not the fact that the balance is the problem. It's more the fact that the balance sometimes creates frustrating and not fun situations.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, like routinely going up against, you know, scenarios where you just have virtually no chance of winning.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, like I said, it's still a game I would, without a doubt, you know, hands down recommend. Like, I'm not saying, like, oh, this ruins. I'm just saying, like, hopefully it gets, you know, maybe a little work, you know, maybe, you know, tries to shift some things around, something like that. Yeah. What I'm really hoping is, I think the objective game modes were actually the bigger strength of the original mod.
Mm-hmm.
And also the original mod used a thing where all these points you're getting, instead of just being your score, they actually are how you unlocked what guns you could use at given round. So I'm kind of hoping they bring that back for the objective game modes, because that much more allowed you to, you know, like, maybe if you weren't as good, you wouldn't, you know, have the ultra weapon within, like, you know, the first 5 minutes, but say by the end of the game, you at least got to have some time with the good weapons.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of makes any unbalance less annoying if you get your shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still good stuff.
Okay.
And free.
Anything else?
No, that's really been it. Like I said, I'm unfortunately kind of in between things. So waiting for Wildstar to come out on Saturday. So
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So being that this was a holiday weekend, I sat down and I was like, I'm going to play a game for the show. And I proceeded to play a game that I can't talk about in any substance.
Oh no.
Yep. Walking Dead season 2, episode 3.
Oh,
it's like, well, I could talk about how difficult it was to make the choice between, oh, well, shit.
Well, tell me this. Are there buttons?
There are buttons.
Are there characters?
Oh, yeah, lots of characters. Lots of good characters.
So, really, like, do we need another? Does it need a sequel? The first was pretty good. It had those buttons and characters.
Plenty of buttons and characters.
Yeah, like, why? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, but you know, have buttons and characters. 7.5 out of 10. Oh man, so I feel like just a little like an asshole for that.
Does it still have the insanely short period of time to make decisions?
I mean, it depends on the decision.
Can you read all the options before the time expires?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless it explicitly doesn't want you to. Like, if it, you know, and that's something that they're getting more comfortable doing. Just kind of like, we'll give you the illusion of a choice because that's all you ever really had to begin with.
So take your time.
we'll give you the illusion of a choice, and we're going to put you in situations where, like, the we're going to force the timer to run out, or we're going to make this impossible just to kind of like get you stressed out. And so, as a work of kind of like manipulating your emotions and bringing you along for the ride and making you wonder what's going to happen from beat to beat, it still continues to be really successful. Which, you know, obviously I think that's why season 1 stuck out in our heads as much as it did, you know, just because it does that. It kind of feels like the season has found its footing. I didn't have too many grievous concerns with episodes 1 or 2, but this, this definitely brings, you know, the stakes up, right?
Well, I definitely remember you complaining for episode 1 that, you know, it's a new season, you get a whole bunch of new characters, and you just know in the back of your mind that, like, 90% of them are going to be
fodder
dead relatively quickly. So it's hard to, you know, get emotionally invested in every single one of them, knowing that just, you know, you don't have genre blindness. Most of these people are going to go away pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not all of them have died off. Plenty of them have, but not all of them have. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just like any TV show or movie. Like, you can't immediately care about these people as soon as you see them. You know, maybe I'm revealing some kind of like deep-seated sociopathy, but, you know, like now, like the ones that I've been able to spend a lot of time with, it's kind of like, okay, cool. I know who you are and what you're about. And, you know, now to the point where they're making me make decisions about your fate, it feels like the pathos around that is earned. Right.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So have you yet made a decision, immediately regretted it, and dove across the room to shut off the console to get your decision back?
No, not really. That's not how I want to play these.
Wait, it's does it autosave?
I mean, to a certain extent, it does.
Oh, yeah. Bullshit.
Well, why bullshit? Like, the game is about choice.
I just hate autosaving on the principle of things.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, just like, I've not done that. Like, I pay attention to when it saves. Like, if it was, you know, to the point where, like, oh, I really don't want to be that, I could probably, you know, Alt F4 out of the window and get back into it. But that, you know, that's just not how I want to play it. Like, just to a certain extent, A, it doesn't matter. You're going to see a lot of the stuff anyway. And B, it's like, oh, you know, it's a protracted, dramatic personality test. And so, you know, like, and you know, to like even further to that point, you're making decisions with incomplete information. And so if you're, you know, making a decision, seeing an unfavorable outcome and going back to it and making the different one, then, well, you're kind of playing against the actual game itself.
Oh,
you're playing with the box and not the game, right?
No, the one time I did that was I accidentally hit the wrong button for what I meant to hit. And so just the immediately regretting it was seeing the character say something that was a total dick thing to say and, like, completely against what I was trying to do. And be like, oh, shit, you know, and booting out and starting over from a little bit before. But I made all the same decisions up to that point and then, you know, changed the one thing that was an honest mistake to begin with.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's good. It was a nice little reprieve yesterday. I've continued playing Rocksmith, but that's not too terribly surprising. I only bring it up to say they put out a cake pack.
Ooh.
I don't like a lot of Cake's music, but there are a couple of songs that are real nifty on guitar, so I got the Distance and Short Skirt Long Jacket, and they're all really catchy and really easy to play, so I felt comfortable dropping some money on those to get those charts and be like, yeah, I totally know these songs, and it's fun to see a number go up when I play them.
Cake generally has some pretty good bass lines, so I might have to look into that for myself.
Check out The Distance. That has a great bass line on it. And then I also picked up Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People, which wasn't as interesting as I expected it to be, but oh well.
But I could go for some cake.
Nobody say it, because I'm going to just fucking fly off the handle and disconnect everybody.
Oh.
Okay, cool. All right, we're agreed.
Oh.
Just the knowing.
Yeah.
Lies.
And
and everyone's disconnected.
but yeah. Other than that, I've been playing some Waxworks for Hex Crank. But boy, is that a fucking slog! That is so bad. But like it's interesting enough that it warrants continuing to play it. But it is a drain on my patience.
Ooh.
Really, I thought that was supposed to be one of the better of like that era of like. Isn't that one of the weird, like, almost, like, pseudo-turn-based?
Yeah, it is, except the combat's kind of some bullshit that really just depends on you mashing your mouse button. Like, pressing, like, you know, clicking in different areas of the screen does different kinds of attacks, but I've not found any rhyme or reason as to what's more successful. I like walking around and making a map, you know? Like, making maps is fun. However, the design of these areas seems to be so arbitrary as to defy that. And I shit you not, sorry to talk like a bro there, but I'm really serious. At least in the pyramid level, which is where I'm still stuck at, there are traps that consist of a 1 pixel wide line across the screen that you have to like recognize when you're in a space with one of them and then press a special button. However, there are 1 pixel line that pretty much exactly blends in. So, like, if you're just walking down a hallway and you forget that it's, you know, 5 steps down and not 4 steps down or 6 steps down, then you just get a little overly graphic, overly gory, death scene.
Are these supposed to be, like, trip lines?
Yeah.
Wait. What does the Waxworks have to do with a pyramid?
Well, no, just like it's you're going to your uncle's Waxworks, and you know there's a curse in your family that they're always going to be twins, and one of them is evil, and this wax, you know, he has this Waxworks, but it connects back to these ancient eras of your family, and you know, like you're transported there, and you are one of the twins going after the other twin. So yeah,
does the other twin have a goatee?
I have no idea. I haven't encountered the other twin yet because it's fucking impossible.
Do you
I really hope they M. Night Shyamalan it and you're the evil twin.
Spoiler alert, I've looked at this plot synopses, and yes, that is totally the case.
Oh no! So you do have a goatee.
Yeah.
Wait, how do you actually, like... how do you even do that, though? Like, do they force you to do evil things?
No, no. I think that it just turns out that so like one of the chapters is you are in Victorian England trying to stop Jack the Ripper. I'm not quite sure how they make that to be the case where you're Jack the Ripper and not the person who's going around killing people. But yeah, but that is that's the way it shakes out. Good God, the things I do.
See, I feel like you should just, like, if any of these turn out to be awful, just kick them out to abject suffering and do, like, two stones with one bird.
Well, I posted on the Facebook group saying, hey, I might be quitting this. And then Gary chimed in, and he's all like, I don't know, man, you should probably be patient, just see it through. It's like, all right, so it's going to be, like, 2 months until the next article is published. So I lay the onus entirely on him.
Yeah. It's always...
It's always that level of produce, like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess you can quit if you want. It's like, okay, I must finish it now.
It's like, well, yeah, because fuck you. Man.
Oh, you're going to do that. Okay.
Yeah. Don't even affect that tone of voice, because it really actually just makes me super angry. Oh.
If I ever need Cole to Hulk out, now I've got it.
Yeah. other than that, I've been playing, just doing stuff for other shows. The Dolphin emulator on on Windows and Mac, like to play GameCube and Wii games. Totally legit. Like, it's pretty good.
What is this?
I'm really disappointed that this was not a piece of software that lets you emulate a dolphin.
on the Oculus, like it's the new it's the new Echo the Dolphin simulator. Yeah. No, it's I ordered a copy of X-Men Legends 2 because that is the next game that we're playing, and my Wii couldn't read the disc, so in the interest of being able to play it on time while I'm waiting for the other copy to come, I am playing it on my PC in the GameCube emulator and just like totally overscanning it, so now I know that if I ever need it, I can just make my own HD remake of any GameCube game.
Huh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's about it.
Cool.
You guys want to button it up?
Let's button it up.
That was level number 63. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Dennis, for joining
surviving.
Us again. Yeah, yes, for getting back home safely. We are
happy to do it.
We're all very happy to have you back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to keep the admin stuff kind of short. You can check us out. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. We put up the multiplayer questions usually on there. That is our listener interaction time. And it's usually a good time. And usually on Tuesday afternoons. We're recording at a weird time today, so that's why that didn't happen. But, we're alive and we're good. Other than that, leave us a rating or review on iTunes, and if you want to support the network monetarily, go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar, check out our Patreon campaign, where you can pledge to donate a certain amount per month, or just buy something from our Amazon link, also on that same page, and we get a little kickback every time you do that. Cool, guys. So, I have been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia, at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Mm. And until next time, I would recommend send Dennis a nice little word. Welcome him back to the show. And also Snapchat my junk.
The one thing I remember, everything fairly clearly, but the one thing that's emblazoned in my mind is once they actually got me to the emergency room, it kind of got me through the triage unit and, you know, said what had happened. They'd asked me all the questions and kind of had the initial, wow, I guess this really was a stroke kind of diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And they were going to put me in a room until I could have the test that I needed. And the one guy, doctor in the triage room who was like leading, just goes, why did this 26-year-old have a stroke? And like whirls and turns and goes out of the room. It was like a very overdramatic, like in his mind.
And then off in the distance, you could hear a violin.
Yeah. So I expected someone to be like, scene, good work, everyone.
Drops a smoke pellet.
Drops a smoke pellet, and you see him like fiddling with the door. Like, damn it. Swipes his key card and then just drops another one and then goes away. Ben, you had some beef with Dead Space 2.
I'm gonna
hop off then. Okay. But it was good doing this again.
Yeah.
Once again, thank you guys. It was freaking awesome having you all calling me and everything. Yeah. And I'll see you around.
Yeah.
All right. Bye bye.
Holla.
All right.
Okay.
Are we alone?
I think we're alone.
Is it secret?
I'm here,
David
but
is still
I don't
here.
Care.
All right. So beef number one. Okay, so the part at the end, there was one part where you have an interaction with humans, like when it's like the equivalent of cops or whatever try and stop you from entering the facility.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? All right, so that was like, okay, this is a great potential because this could show how deranged this person could be by listening to voices in his head by killing other humans. Like, it's one thing to kill monsters. It's a different thing to kill other humans. That wasn't pursued at all because they basically seemed to only have designed for killing aliens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was no other AI program besides that. And so it was disappointing to, like, first see the other humans be like, all right, this might be a matchup or whatever. I might need to, like, sneak around them. But instead of just being, I sneak around them, unplug the power, let the aliens in, then I'm just going to fight more aliens, you know?
Yeah, so it's like, a missed opportunity to explore, like, the ethics of that.
Yeah, and it just got repetitive because you were fighting the same things over and over again. Yeah, that was the main one. Yeah, because I thought it could be – it had potential as far as, like, taking on the dude. Even though, like, the bad guy, the quote-unquote bad guy – I don't even know. Do you even kill him? Yeah, you do kill him at the end anyway.
Yeah.
But, like, he was, like, way too underdeveloped because, like, you only hear him through, like, audio broadcast. You never, like, physically interact with him at all, you know? So mm-hmm. It's, like – I don't know. So he was, like, a super flat villain, I feel like. If he was supposed to be the main villain. So that was kind of my other beef. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the only part of it. So that and then the part where they started rolling the credits but then faked you out with that, those were the only two, like, surprises
oh,
I had.
Oh, yeah, with you sitting on the stairs.
Waiting to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that was cool. I mm-hmm. liked the fact that they did that, but I kind of wish that was used in another game that was better. But, So I like those things, but I don't know. And, like, so comparing that with, like, Alpha Protocol, though, where, like, the upgrades
okay,
are
so
pretty...
now I'm getting off.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See you, David.
Peace. Right. Maybe.
Oh.
It's the red one.
Where's that red one going to go?
Oh, he's gone. Okay.
All right. So comparing that with Alpha Protocol, like, the upgrade system there is so much better with, mm-hmm. like, A, just having options, but then B, also, like, having the upgrades affect you as a character and not just being the things that you have bought, you know?
Yeah.
And that you have to, I don't know.
Well, I mean, each, yeah. like, they had milestones where it gave you new things to do at a certain point down each path, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in Dead Space, it was more like this particular thing is going to be more effective to the exclusion of other weapons or powers
yeah.
on your suit.
And that's the thing. The fact that they just have them available at the store but don't force you to use those, I think, is a missed opportunity. Because,
yeah.
like, I only played with four guns, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But there were probably another four or five that I just yeah. didn't even get to see, you know? So it's – I think Resident Evil 4, I think, is the best – the best one to, well, yeah. I think they've done it the best, but...
Resident Evil 4 also had a very limited, like, palette of the kinds of guns mm-hmm. That were there. I mean, like, when I say kinds, I mean, like, type. Like, here's your submachine gun that you can upgrade. Here is your pistol. Here's your shotgun. Here's your rifle. Like, go.
Yeah.
And there was, like, some yeah. special stuff, like grenades and rocket launchers that you really had to manage your inventory to, like, get in there. But but like, you know, you kind of just had to figure out where your money went within those particular types of guns.
Well, I mean, it was spaced out enough that you could pretty much play with every gun, and that was feasible. Like, and then figure out which one was good, and then play with that exclusively the next round, pretty much. But like, they had much more time to work with as opposed to like Dead Space. Dead Space is like a 10-hour game. Resident Evil 4 is like a 25-hour game.
Resident Evil 4 is too long of a game.
Well, no, it's good though. I mean, it gives them a lot of space to work with, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's so like I'm too far away from it, and so when I think back to it, all I think is like the broad strokes, like where the story all of a sudden got really, really small. Like after you got the cultists out of the way, and after you know, you realize, oh, I'm in this big dead city. Like that, it ultimately came down to, you know, Isaac trying to deal with his obsession with his dead girlfriend.
Yeah,
you know, like that landed really hard for me, and I felt like that was a pretty daring choice for all the goofy stuff that was kind of swirling around that. And I like narratives that, you know, operate on a bunch of different levels but keep the smallest, most personal one, you know, being the most the most impactful. What's that?
Yeah, keep it last, since that's like the final issue, don't but I guess the only thing I had against it was the fact that they kind of already treaded that ground in the first game, you
Did
know
they?
I felt like, but maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, so what might be sticking out for me is that they used it for horror, too.
Okay.
In this one, as opposed to in the first game, where like she was really just kind of the oh, that's the really sad thing that happens at the end.
Well, yeah. So in the first one, like you kind of get missing cues from her, like staticky cues from her.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to her, you find out she's dead, but then the last level, she's the one leading you to get the token or whatever and use that for kind of bad purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it kind of seemed the same way, you know, where at the end she was leading you to where you needed to go. And there was just a bigger version of it, but she was trying to manipulate you to do whatever else, you know?
Yeah.
And you, I guess the only difference is in this one, you destroy her, whereas in the first one you didn't, but
yeah. So like, it seemed like, That was the payoff for me, was that he ultimately broke free of that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't. And the other thing that's weird too is like that finale where you're fighting her or whatever is very similar to the ending of Beyond. Like it's a very similar setup as far as like gameplay. And I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have any recollection of how Dead Space handled it.
The
swirling spirits around the pillar, right?
Yeah, there was one thing. I think they had the upside down part where you were on the train hanging upside down, and so I think retroactively this was the first game that did that I know of, because I know that was done in Tomb Raider, it's done in Last of Us, and it might have been done in another game. But so I guess I got to give it props for that if that was the first one that did it. But
yeah
I don't know.
Nor do I.
Whatever.
You played it. You can't get it back.